Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying, multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I am finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. Hello, how are you? Thank you so much for all of the positive responses and DMs from last week's episode with Sophie and Jack. I know that you are all excited to hear this second part in my surrogacy special. Before we head over to the conversation with Em and James, I wanted to let you know about some exciting news here, and that is that at the ripe old age of 13 months, 5 days, Ren has started crawling. Yay! Finally! Just like everyone said, they all do it in their own time. And to be honest, I wasn't too worried, but I did feel for her because I felt like she was ready to have that bit of independence, you know, to pick the toy that she wanted or to go to someone if she wanted. And so I'm really glad that she's got that now. But also, like everyone says, the nightmare of baby-proofing has begun. Why are there suddenly wires all over the floor? Honestly, I just don't even know what they connect to. I really don't, but we will get there and we've got the stair gate up and that kind of thing. So yeah, it's all good. Also, today was the first nursery drop-off where there wasn't even a hint of tears, and it wasn't even her favourite teacher that picked her up. So, you know, my little girl is growing up. Well, more, I like to think that she's settling in and she's confident that we'll be there to bring her home again later. And I still do the thing, you might have heard me on previous episodes sharing this, that I always tell her where I'm going, what I'm doing, and what time I'll be there to pick her up. I think the teachers sometimes think I'm crazy. Others have said they've thought it was really lovely, actually, which has been really nice for me to hear. But I tell her that I'll be back at 3:30, that I'm going to do some work, and that I love her loads. And yeah, it's kind of working for us. So just a little tip there. In other news, I can now officially tell you that I've published my first pregnancy meditation for those who are finally pregnant. And really, it's for anyone who is feeling anxious about their pregnancy because, yeah, it would just work. You don't have to have had fertility treatment. You don't have to have gone through pregnancy loss. It's just helping you visualize your successful pregnancy. And it was something that I really wanted when I was trying to conceive as well, because I used guided meditations to help me through so much, to help me with my insomnia, to help me with anxiety and lots of different things. But when I looked for one to help me through my fertility journey, and I wanted one that saw me through all of it, not just getting pregnant, but actually holding my happy and healthy baby, I couldn't find one. So I wrote a script back in 2017 and recorded it. And recently I decided that I wanted to share it with you guys because it really helped me. So I have updated it and, you know, adapted the script. And now if you are finally pregnant, like I say, it's available to buy. I say it, but there are actually two, because I created one for those with partners and another one for the solo mums out there. So what exactly are the meditations? Each one is approximately 30 minutes long. The first 8 or so minutes, you'll hear me talk you through 3 things, all of which I used in my original meditation. The first one is a breathing exercise. The second are some affirmations. And the third is a visualization to help you look ahead to your baby's birth and really think about what that feels like, and lots more. All of this is accompanied by gentle music, which will continue as my voice fades out, so you can relax or gently fall to sleep. As an extra bonus, I've also included an affirmation exercise using the affirmations from the meditation. My hope is this will encourage you to incorporate affirmations into your daily routine, helping you to not only focus on your pregnancy today, but to also look ahead with joy and excitement. The feedback has been fab, which makes me so happy. Oh, and remember, if you are a Hangout member, you get a discount. So make sure you check out the group first before you buy. I have been asked whether or not you can listen to it when you are trying to conceive. You can, absolutely. But I want to tell you that there is reference to you being pregnant yourself. So as long as you know that and feel like you can move past that, then Absolutely. Go ahead. I listened to this when I was trying to conceive, so there is no reason why you shouldn't be able to. I'm actually working on another one, which I'm hoping to record today and will be with you soon. And it's just going to be a 5-minute meditation to help you connect with your pregnancy that you can listen to at any time when you're at home, when you're at work, when you're sitting waiting for a scan or midwife appointment. It's just going to be a really nice, quick meditation that you can do. And so I will share that with you as soon as it's ready. On to today's episode, where, like I said, I'm chatting to Em and James, who are friends of Sophie and Jack, our intended parents from last week's episode. Em and James are actually so much more than friends, because at the time, Em was carrying Sophie and Jack's baby as their surrogate. And it's so interesting to hear her version of events, and also to hear from James, her husband, because the impact of this on him should not go unrecognised. As I said last week, this group of friends are very special, and it really was a pleasure to chat to them, and I know that you're going to enjoy this too. If you have enjoyed this special or any of my podcast episodes, please, please do subscribe, rate, and please do go and review. It will only take a couple of minutes, but in doing so, it means that even more people will hear about it and it can help them too. So I would really, really appreciate that. Remember also, if you're pregnant, you can sign up to receive my 5 strategies to help you enjoy your pregnancy. There's a link in the show notes, and there's generally links to everything that I'm doing in my Instagram bio as well, so you can always find it there. Okie dokes, that's it for now, other than to say have a lovely week and I will see you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hi everyone, how are you all doing?
Good.
Right.
Good.
The group has grown since the last conversation, which is wonderful. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. Now I'm going to have a total test of names. We have got Sophie and Jack, who were with us for the last conversation.
Yes.
Hi. Parents to be. And now we also have Em and James, who are surrogate and surrogate's husband.
Yes.
Yes.
Wonderful. You. Now it's all over to you lot to talk. I'm done. So it's really amazing to have this conversation. During the conversation with Sophie and Jack, we learn about everything that had gone on with them in their trying to conceive journey to get them to the place that you're at now. What I think would be really, really valuable and important for people who are listening is to understand what it's like to be on the other side of that and to be the surrogate. And it's incredible, James, for you to be here as well. You know, your wife is going through this. She's pregnant, not with your baby. And that's a point of view that people won't necessarily get to hear very often. So thank you so much for sharing. I really, really appreciate it.
No problem.
But I am going to start with you, Em.
Okay.
So you, I heard earlier, came to Sophie and Jack, I'm not sure whether the conversation happened just to one or both of you.
Initially just me.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
And offered to be a surrogate. Like, tell me who you are and what you do that this is something that was in your mind.
Yeah. I think it probably came from the fact that Sophie and I both got pregnant at similar times with our first. And then I think as time went on, obviously Sophie's story transpired and my story transpired and ours went much smoother, let's say. It was more of an A to B to have our 2 children, whereas it wasn't for Sophie and Jack. And it just felt like a bit of a no-brainer, really, to at least try an offer. And I didn't know if they'd say yes, they'd want to do that, or no. that was kind of how it all came about, wasn't it?
And you must have done some research before this. This isn't something you just say at the drop of a hat. Had you looked into it? Had you both discussed it before you had actually made the offer?
I kind of looked into the legalities more than anything else, because I think everyone's kind of perspective on it is quite individual. And it wasn't that, I don't know, surrogacy isn't a word that I'd come across loads. It wasn't in my head. I wasn't thinking I'm going to be their surrogate. It was more of just going to help them have a baby. So it wasn't, I guess in the UK especially, it's not something that's that common. So looking at the legalities of it was the first thing, really. I don't think there was there was research, but I think I knew if I asked Sophie if she wanted to do it, she'd do the research for me.
It's handy having a friend like that, isn't it? And we should say at this point, you had one baby, or?
So I was pregnant with Theo.
With the second?
Yeah, so Molly was 2. And I think it must have been past the first trimester with Theo. And it was kind of a, if this all goes well sort of thing, I'd be willing to try this for you.
And you, I think I'm right in saying you had decided that you're not having any more children necessarily.
Yeah.
So this would be, you know, kind of final pregnancy, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely. And it was, I guess I'll go into it at some point, but I was always, I don't know, I never felt that like maternal in the sense I wanted a massive family, and I was quite happy with one. I mean, I love my 2 children dearly, but I was always happy to kind of stop at 2, and so was James. So, and we still are. So, yeah.
I think us being so lucky, obviously, with how easy it was for us, and the fact that we were fortunate to have a boy and a girl, it just felt like family was complete. Mm. And I don't think that will change.
He said nervously. I don't think it will. Yeah. How did it feel, Jane, for you when Em kind of came to you? And was it just like a casual conversation? Does it just happen like that?
There were probably up to 10 casual conversations about it, I reckon, before you approached Sophie about it, maybe. Mm. And it was just, I'd like to do this initially. And I was like, okay. You need a lot of time to think about this, like a lot of time. She was like, I have thought about it a little bit. And I was like, take some more. And then it was just sort of progressed from there, really. The more research she was doing and the more like, are you sure you're happy with this? And I was like, well, look, if you're happy, I'm happy kind of thing. And obviously, we know how important it was to these guys. And it just, towards the end, it just felt right, didn't it?
I suppose as those conversations went on, we were seeing more hurdles for Sophie and Jack as well to cross. So it wasn't like it was all just staying the same. It was like another bout of bad news. Mm-hmm. And you know, they were getting more and more broken by all of this, so it was almost like it was becoming an easier option, wasn't it, for us to offer it, rather than so much staying in the same place all the time. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
No, I can understand it. It kind of compounded your thought process.
And it was also to give a little bit of hope at a very difficult time for them as well, which I think was important, just to be like, look, if it doesn't ever happen for you the way that you want it to happen, there's an option here that you could consider, kind of thing.
It is incredible. And I can only anticipate that it's, you know, it's such a gift, but it must also be quite a privilege to carry your friend's baby as well.
It sounds cheesy, doesn't it? But it actually really is, because I don't know, they trust you with it. And that's like, you know, I find it hard trusting babysitters. So it's kind of the same thing, really. Someone else carrying your genes to then come back to you is a big thing.
Although we have to see them all the time.
Testing the friendship. But tell us, you know, what are the things that go, if there was someone listening who's thinking about being a surrogate, or the partner of someone who's thinking about being a surrogate, like, what are the things? So I'm going to say something that might be, you know, physically, you're going to be pregnant again, so you're going to be exhausted. Am I going to have sex with them? What am I going to do with the other children? Like, you know, any of them, any other questions? Like, what are the thoughts that, what are the things that you cover? What are the things you think about?
I mean, I think for me, one thing that made it a little bit of an easier decision for us was the fact that the way handles pregnancy is just incredible. She just takes in her stride. She's never had much sort of sickness or anything like that. Yes, there's a tiredness, and yes, we do clash occasionally. But she really does take in her stride, and I think that makes a big difference. And it was also at a time in our lives where we had taken a back step from work a little bit. I had finished up at my job. We were spending more time with the kids, so I was a bit more able to be a bit more hands-on with our kids and help out, where obviously she was a bit sore, tired, and going through the pregnancy process. So we were at a stage of life where it was a good window for us to be able to offer that kind of thing, really.
So it is about all of the pieces falling into place, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because if we'd been in full-time work, it would have been really difficult with childcare and things and pickups and drop-offs. So, yeah, it did kind of work at a good time, really. You know, the upcoming birth is we're all managing it, aren't we? The logistics of the kids and things. So it's all of us kind of doing it together.
Team effort.
Yeah, sure. Definitely.
So once you had decided that you were going to offer this amazing gift, and we heard earlier that you had a drink outside in the garden when Sophie and Jack had got back from travelling. And so it's one thing to ask, it's another for people to say, actually, we want to take you up on that. How did that feel?
Go on, you go.
That took a little while, right? Am I right in saying that? That did take a little while to offer it.
Like
and then
us come back.
Exactly. Yeah. Because obviously you wanted to, it's a difficult way to say, but exhaust the options, obviously, that you could try
we
carry
said,
a baby yourself.
It took that time to just digest it and, you know it was the right, you know, route for us to take.
Kind of accept it as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think I was probably a bit more, let's just do it.
Yeah, you were, it took me a bit longer, didn't it?
Yeah.
I think you were the final one to come on board.
Yeah. We were saying earlier that the second ectopic was really the final, right, that's it. Yeah, let's go for surrogacy. Let's try surrogacy. So we all sat in the garden, didn't we, with the kids?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Kind of.
It's like the biggest conversation of your life. They're like, ah, I think I was drinking red wine. I'm not sure.
It was a lot of conversations. So that, so that was... I feel like you wrote back to us or something. There was something in writing,
Em wrote us a letter, which I haven't spoken about.
Oh, go on then.
So initially you said it to me in conversation, but it was on a quite... I was having quite a bad day, I think, when you told me, and so I didn't really digest it. And then to let us know that Em was serious, or Em and James are serious, they wrote us a letter, an email.
Mm-hmm.
We found it the other day.
It's the modern way.
To kind of just, to reiterate that they were serious about the offer. And I think we wrote back at that point,
but
that was before we went travelling. So we still weren't fully decided, but we were nearing, the decision being
we kind of just felt if we put it in writing, it was like they could talk about it together without feeling that pressure of us looking at them saying do they want yes or no, and take time to do it, really, and then look back on it,
when they do get out of their email.
Exactly.
I think that's that's really thoughtful, because you're right, you say anything to someone straight, kind of face to face, and if it's the first time they've heard it, or if it's a huge decision like this, it does take a bit of time to process, doesn't it? Like, it makes me think of pregnancy announcements, and like, yay, I'm pregnant, yay, I'm really pleased for you, but oh my God, I'm dying inside because it's not me again, and so you took that out of the equation, that kind of need to be immediate, and gave them the opportunity to really think about it, and you had thought about it enough, and often writing things down really does give you clarity, doesn't it? So I think that's like, a huge credit to you guys for having the kind of foresight to do that. I think that probably gave you the space that you needed to really make that decision. Which is a really, I don't want to say top tip, sounds really funny, but it's really, really good. I think that's...
Yeah, because you're right, we had the time to have the thought process, whereas they wouldn't have had it yet. And it was a bit of a clanger, I suppose.
It's quite a big deal.
Yeah.
So... You've got two children, so they're aware of all of this. You said they were in the garden for the conversation and things. At what point did you bring them into the conversation properly?
So probably not until after the 12-week scan, was it?
Yeah.
Mainly because, I think they wouldn't have remembered that conversation because they were still...
They
were
tiny.
Yeah, Molly was...
They were still sort of tottering around the garden and playing, weren't they?
I was still feeding Theo at that point, and that kind of... He was still really little.
And then the sort of safety net of the 12-week scan, I think it became a little bit more real.
And also people around us were talking about it more then, weren't they? It was a bit more open, so they were bound to hear things a bit more.
We had the book as well. What's the book?
So I bought them a book called The Kangaroo's Pouch, which is just about, you know, a kangaroo who goes to help a friend who can't carry the baby. What's a baby kangaroo called?
Joey.
Joey. To carry the Joey. So I bought it for them, for Em and James to read, which I think it's an amazing book. Like, and I bought one for the baby so that I can read it to him as well.
Oh, so it's a children's book? It's a children's book. Explaining surrogacy. Oh, wow.
To explain surrogacy to young children.
Yeah.
So. Oh, incredible. And it's called The Kangaroo's Pouch.
Yes.
I will link to that in the show notes as well for anyone who's listening. So, oh, brilliant. Yeah. It's so great now that there are these kind of forms of communication to support us. It's just because with donor conception and other things, you know, you see more and more books. It's incredible, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Molly's really aware, isn't she?
Yeah, she keeps telling you the baby's in my tummy.
Every time I see it.
Yeah.
Taking the baby today.
She thinks it's
like a present.
Yeah. She's dying to open it.
Oh, that's lovely, though.
But I think in the book, the bit she latched onto the most when I read it to her anyway was... the kangaroo, there's a visual of sort of everyone playing with their children and the kangaroos playing with their children, then two sadder kangaroos kind of in the background, and she was like, oh, I don't want them to be sad. So that's kind of where she, I think, connects to it a bit more, that we're helping them not be sad.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as that with children, really.
That's it. It's quite black and white, isn't it? Really, in a really nice way. So
yeah, and I'm sure when she gets older, she'll have questions about, you know, how the reproductive system works. Hang on a minute. But, you know, just take it day by day, really.
Yeah,
when
she
has questions.
They're the questions we all dread, I think. Already, but
like, you know, in her class, there'll be people who are from all different, you know, conception backgrounds. So it'll be very different to when we've grown up at school.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. That's kind of the world we want to live in, isn't
it? Exactly.
For sure. So everybody said yes. And we heard previously that Sophie and Jack then went through, was it one, two rounds of IVF?
It was one round to get some embryos. So we got two embryos that we froze.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then we go to you, to have IVF. Now, have you had any experience of IVF previously other than hearing
through Sophie? Yeah. No, I don't think either of us have. So yeah, I mean, you told us a lot about kind of how you were, your journey and things, but no, we didn't know at all. So it was all new, and even just going to the clinic was like a day out for me. It sounds silly, but we had obviously the two little ones at home, so you know, experiencing that.
A day out for you and a day out.
Exactly. So yeah, I learned a lot throughout the whole process.
Yeah. So I was saying earlier that we had two, we monitor your cycles twice, didn't we, after you stopped breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And both times your lining wasn't quite right. Mm-hmm. So the transfer was cancelled twice, which was quite a bit of a spanner in the works, because every time you get so close and then it's like, no, it cancelled.
Yeah.
So.
How did that make you feel, Em?
I guess because I hadn't been kind of battered by it over the years, I thought it was still going to be okay, but obviously you guys felt it was like really disappointing and things. So it's kind of trying to keep your hopes up that there's still, you know, we can still keep going, but it'll be another month. But I was getting a bit of insight, obviously, into how that felt, because again, we'd been very lucky that it hadn't taken so long, so... I guess that month wait is very long to then try again and start monitoring everything again.
And the sudden, like, realisation that you're analysing everything as well, like when you get pregnant naturally, and I have not been there, but, you know, you don't think about what's, other than the obvious, like, you don't think about what's going on in there, but now you're suddenly getting an insight into yourself as well.
And I guess because have you explained about the natural cycle
rather than medicated?
You can explain. So when we had our initial consultations, there was the option given for natural versus medicated cycle, and I was quite keen to try natural, just because in my head it was about, you know, I had conceived naturally before, so hopefully that would happen again, just need to have the right environment for it. So and I think quite mindful of being around my kids with, you know, lots of medication, hormones, and knowing that Soph had gone through all that and it wasn't the easiest process for her, I was quite prepared when I offered to go through that, but knowing there was a less kind of intervening way to do it was quite appealing to me, and these guys are obviously very supportive of that. So we went for the natural way, which makes there be more appointments and more monitoring, because you don't control things like lining and all those things. So yeah, there's a few instances where we'd have to come in from here and there and everywhere. Worth it in the end, but it's just how it is with a natural cycle.
Yeah, and were you working at this point? How did you make those appointments?
Yes, I was. My work were really supportive and flexible, so I don't think I told them actually until I'd actually conceived. I told my boss that I was thinking about doing it and kind of in the process, but I work from home a lot, so I was able to manage it around work.
Yeah.
I don't remember it being a problem.
It's only usually the week before the transfer where we had to be there sort of every day. Other than that, it was kind of ad hoc appointments. So, but it is that week leading up to transfer where they need to monitor quite closely. So,
And again, that's where it hurt, where James wasn't committed to a job and he was with the kids, so he could be at home.
Indeed, yeah.
That
worked quite well. That did work well, didn't it? Yeah, that's amazing.
I think you do need support around you as, you know, if you were doing the medicated cycle, that would have been much more straightforward, wouldn't it? There would have been set dates.
Go up as much.
Yeah, to then you could plan around that.
But you talk about support, you know, like at what point, I'm assuming, like definitely now, let's face it, because you're showing, I say that.
You'd hope so.
People around you, your friends and family, like when did you let them into everything that was going on?
Yeah, that was just about the 12-week mark, wasn't it, as well?
Family, yeah. I mean, friends, obviously, you've kind of spoken about the places your sort of girl group, haven't you? Our closest friends sort of knew before.
Quite early on.
Yeah. Quite early doors. So that was different. But then family, particularly our side, because it's a little bit different to obviously carrying your own baby when you tell some parts of the family very early doors. But it wasn't sort of straight away. It was probably about that 12-week scan mark, wasn't it? Where you just get that little bit of reassurance from the 12-week scan where sort of everything's the right measurements, the heartbeat's there.
I told my grandma, actually, I'm very close to my grandma, and I told her, being of an older generation, I wasn't sure how she was going to, you know, could take it and things, but she was so lovely about it and, you know, very, almost like proud that we're doing that for them. So I told her quite early on, because I had to go back from her when we were visiting her, didn't I, to London.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was when I told her quite early on.
Because it must be, like, to share with it, and I'm just thinking about it now in my head, because when you're pregnant, you go, you tell people who don't necessarily know, we're pregnant. You know, but I guess in this instance it's we're pregnant and you're pregnant, but you're not pregnant, James.
No.
So, you know, like how just, and it can be as subtle as that, can't it? Like normally you would say we're pregnant, but how did you manage people's responses, because you're telling them you're pregnant, but then in the same instance you're saying, but it's not mine. And so that must have been, they must have been quite difficult. You could have some fun with that. Sorry. Yeah, I could tell from the reaction.
We had a lot of fun.
But you know, but it's, yeah, how that's a really difficult, you know, you have to manage that quite well in all seriousness, because otherwise people are getting excited because you're pregnant.
I mean all our friends are clear, we've got a lot of mutual close friends, haven't we, so that was quite easy because they obviously knew through then and they knew what was going on most of the time anyway. I guess my like university friends and people who wouldn't know them, I just told, they actually knew, most of my close friends would know what was happening with Sophie and Jack because they're my close friends and they're my, you know, they're with that family. So they would have met them along the way and things. So I don't know, I never really found it an issue until I started showing. Then I'd just tell people, you know, in the street or whoever might ask, oh, how far along are you? Is it your first? That kind of thing. I just say it's a bit of a different story and then just kind of explain. And everyone's always really lovely about it.
Yeah.
No, expect it.
No, but starting with that, it's a bit of a different story.
Yeah.
It kind of sets the path for, or sets the scene, should I say, for it not being straightforwardly, you know, that you're pregnant. So, that's kind of a good a good, I'm just thinking of people who might be in this situation, to give them ideas.
Yeah.
And that's a really nice one. Yeah. So yeah, it's a bit of
I mean, everyone asks when they see a bump, don't they?
Of course.
How far along you are and things. And we were buying a car the other day, weren't we? And 6'4" guy, and he was asking me the questions about, you know, how am I going to fit 3 kids in there? I was like, well, actually, right. And he gave me this massive hug. So sweet. Like, the people you least expect.
Yeah.
Be actually quite touched by it all. So. Yeah, it's never had a negative response. So, but you just got to kind of face into it, I think. I feel weird lying about it. Because then you just go down this whole path of stories. And I think it's nice to tell people that, you know, that might not be exposed to it normally as well.
I think you're absolutely right. And what about at work? So they know now, obviously.
Yeah.
Are you still...
No, I actually left last week.
So, last week, okay.
Yeah, so I left for good to concentrate on my own business.
Which we will definitely talk about. But when you were in work,
yeah.
You know, were they, you said you could work quite flexibly anyway.
Yes.
But then the maternity rights, like that's you, isn't it, really?
Technically, yeah. So on paper and policy-wise and all that kind of thing, yes, it would be. And I never had to have the conversation. They were very good with kind of saying I could have some maternity leave for my recovery and things. So that's why I stayed on a little bit longer. There as well, so that I could qualify for it, and they supported me in that process. So, yes, I think if you were just in a standard job, you would definitely tell them, you'd have to go through the same process of telling them that I think it's 16 weeks is the normal time to tell them, at least by then, so then they can plan and everything. And then you would qualify for maternity leave as the mother, because you would be on paper that the mother until the baby gets adopted. I guess, I mean, I don't know if you were to go to like a solicitor, what they would say, but I assume from, you know, my work being that supportive and everything, that that's how it works in the UK.
Well, I think so. Like you say, you are physically pregnant. So you know, when you think of some of the maternity rights, it's about risk assessments and, you know, and so you need to make sure and appointments and things. And what's your maternity situation, Sophie?
Basically, I basically get adoption leave or adoption pay because it's like we're adopting our own child, which sounds ridiculous, but that is just the way it works in the UK. So it depends on what company you obviously work for, but I will qualify for adoption pay rather than maternity pay. So I get the statutory amount. And then I think Jack qualifies for adoption leave as well. I can't think exactly how that works.
Yeah.
So it's not the same as maternity, but it is on a par. They just call it something different.
But it's the same length of time.
I mean, technically, you qualify for paternity. Obviously, you're not going to. We don't need it. But it's, if you were to look at black and white, what the whole process is, and that's why it's all a bit strange, really.
Yeah.
But that works, like you mentioned earlier on, you know, like, granted, you'll be handing the baby over, but you've still got the physical recovery. So for you to have, you know, it's 2 weeks paternity to look after him and support her and be able to look after the kids and things, you know, that still makes sense for you to qualify completely.
Yeah, I think it's obviously something that the UK is looking into. I know there's a lot of things going on with the government at the minute and on surrogacy in the UK and what needs to change with the whole process. Hopefully we'll see, what the outcome is on things. Like, for instance, the parental order and the fact that, you know, even if it's your embryo and the surrogate's agreed with everything, you know, really the mother and father, you know, of... genetically should go on the birth certificate, and it would make it actually easy for the surrogate because it's a lot of responsibility also for, you know, for both parties. But
because you mentioned earlier on that you're going on holiday, but if anything were to happen, then Em needs to, and James, because you'll be on the birth certificate as well, you know, would need to be there to sign for anything or make any decisions about medication, etc. So God forbid any of that would happen. But you know, it needs to be considered. Whereas if you went on immediately as the parents, as you are, then we wouldn't need to worry about that.
In most other countries, it's just the UK is slightly different at the minute anyway.
And you mentioned earlier on in the UK, you can only do it altruistically. So it can never be a paid for surrogate situation in the UK.
No, it's illegal to pay for a surrogate. You pay expenses up to a certain amount. And it's obviously a little bit different for us because it's our friend that's offered. If you're going for an agency, I'm sure there's a lot of fees involved. I'm not quite sure because we never went down that route. So yeah, so we pay for all Em's travel to any clinic appointments or hospitals, you know, anything like that, any medication that Em's need, vitamins, maternity clothes that she needs.
Pregnancy yoga
yeah. to help her back, any sort of childcare after the C-section, that's you know, help out with that. It's all those type of expenses that you have to think about. But yeah, if you go for an agency, I'm sure that they kind of give you a list of everything. So, but yeah, legally you cannot pay a surrogate in the UK, like America.
Yeah.
So, which is, you know, there's a lot of fees in America. It's quite expensive.
I think it is really
a route to go down.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah. No, I think it is very expensive. Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. And I did an episode which people can listen to with Jen Hepton. Mm-hmm. And she is living in America at the moment and she has gone through surrogacy there. So she talks about that and they're in different states. And depending on where you are in America, different states have different laws and things about it as well. Yeah. So, yeah, you really need to, wherever you are, you really need to look into it and find whether it's the charity or whether, you know, there are businesses out there who are doing amazing work. Yeah. But just, investigate kind of thoroughly what Absolutely. Is the process wherever you're based.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really important to say because it is so different. So you're pregnant and then you go to Scotland and have the first scan away.
We were obviously hoping it was going to happen. I guess March time was when we started like the process, and then it got to July. And I had this window at work where I was going to be able to work, you know, wherever, and because it kind of all shuts down in the summer. And we were planning this trip in our camper van up to Scotland. And I think it all ended up working for the best, didn't it? Because it was that waiting period.
Yeah.
And you probably would have gone mad. We would have gone mad if we were all kind of in each other's pockets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You probably still weren't mad. At least we were off in Outer Hebrides Islands.
Yeah.
But yeah, we did have the first scan, which we tried to FaceTime, but then there was no signal. The very nice sonographer let me film everything, so you've got that, haven't you?
Yeah.
And was that a nerve-wracking time for you? And actually, let's rewind a little bit. You had the successful transfer.
Yes.
You haven't been through a 2-week wait before, per se. Like, what did that, and James, like, what did that feel like for you, like being so close in it?
I mean, yeah, I guess at the end of the day, we obviously didn't really know what the true problem was with Sophie trying to carry. We didn't know where the actual problem lay. So we wasn't sure if it was just her not being able to get pregnant or carry the pregnancy. And then, so, I mean, from the off, I actually just thought as soon as they accepted the offer, it was just going to happen. And I know that's really naive to say, but I just felt like it was meant to be and it was going to happen and that was just the way it was going to be. Obviously, these guys, with all they went through, were far less confident and were far more sceptical, but it just felt from the off like it was going to go right, didn't it?
Interesting that you say because Jack said exactly the same thing when we were talking previously. Right. Yeah, like as soon as it... that it just had this kind of... And I can almost imagine it. It's just like this wave of calm, kind of just knowing that it's all going to be all right from here on out.
I think that was quite important as well, was just you don't want that nerves. You don't want the worry that it might not work. I think it's better to be in a more positive place. I think that always helps with things, whether it's pregnancy or whatever else. But so I think that was always the case. We just remained positive. We just said it was going to work. And we just went through the process kind of thing.
Yeah, we talked about the pregnancy test that you did it kind of together, so to speak, on the phone, power of technology.
Yeah.
And that must have just been, it seems silly even asking the question, just bloody amazing.
Yeah, and it's hard though, isn't it? Because you still do, because of what they've been through and everything. I knew that they wouldn't be fully like, yes, this is it, it's done, at that pregnancy test still. So yes, it was amazing, but it was always going to be a bit of a, we've still got a few hurdles to go through and things. Because until you got to the point where you passed the points that you've been, carried and been pregnant. So it was a massive hurdle, and it was a massive, win and whatever how you want to describe it. But I don't feel like until it was really probably the 12 weeks gone that everyone relaxed fully.
Yeah, which is a nice place to be.
Yeah.
And this feels like a good point to kind of talk about what you're doing now, Em, and because I think it gives some background into perhaps why you were a person that would be open to surrogacy. Mm. So you run the Mindful Birth Group.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah. So I guess going back to saying I wasn't particularly wanting a massive family and things, I was quite like scared of birth and to say the least, and James was much more up for starting a family than I was at the time. Just because I didn't understand it, I didn't really know how everything worked and it was the unknown. So did a hypnobirthing course that completely changed my mindset and ended up having two home births with Molly and Theo. So it was really completely from wanting to have all the interventions and drugs and everything. And it's definitely not about not having the drugs. It's about doing what feels right for you and in your kind of safe zone. And for me, it was at home. So then kind of went on to wanting to teach other people about those techniques and that mindset and things, and started up the Mindful Birth Group just around the time that I had Theo. And I think because I was in such a positive place about, how the body works for birth, and actually if you do need help, that's okay as well. And it was just a process in life rather than something to be fearful of. Pregnancy obviously was something that, as James kindly said, I was, quite lucky that I didn't experience sickness and things. And I thought it won't impact our family as much as it might. Every pregnancy is different, so it could have been very different, but we've kind of had a similar experience with Sophie and Jack's baby as well. So, started up teaching, and it's kind of spiraled from there, really. And I think it's just something I love doing, and definitely having started that business, I don't like calling it a business, but I guess it is because it's something that is becoming something that can kind of support our family.
So are you a trained doula? Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, so trained as a hypnobirthing teacher and kind of got the diploma and everything in that. And then I was finding that parents were asking me, who I was teaching, if I could be at their births with them as well. And again, this is something that 4 years ago, 5 years ago, if you'd asked me this, I'd have said, absolutely, I can't do it myself, let alone be with someone else. But since then, I just love everything to do with supporting parents, women, but parents as well, especially the dads who might be nervous about it and need that extra kind of emotional support. So they were, parents were asking me who I was teaching, if I'd be with them as well. And so, yeah, trained as a doula recently, and hope to kind of start helping people at birth as well, and that emotional side, not the medical side, obviously, from after this baby's born, really.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And it will give you such an amazing insight. Like, I speak at midwifery courses to give, them an understanding of what it's like. And I talk about the handover from fertility clinic care to NHS care. And, and there's such a lack of knowledge. Mm. But for you to have gone through this now, like, your knowledge is going to be, not just IVF or I suppose start from the beginning, not just your own pregnancies and then IVF and now surrogacy. Mm. You've got a huge amount of knowledge there, which will be incredible for your clients and has put you in a position where, gosh, so from someone who was scared of giving birth, then you've offered to do it for someone else, which is just... That's amazing. And we were talking previously about the fact that you were having a C-section.
Yes.
Do you mind talking about your thought process behind that?
No, not at all. I mean, I think initially I definitely defaulted to thinking, oh, home birth would be lovely because, that's what I'd been through. And I visualised and I thought, oh, Sophie and Jack can, they just have their baby and that's it. They go upstairs and off we go out the front door.
She's really good at this, isn't she? She's so confident.
But then obviously doing what I do and knowing that birth doesn't always go to plan, and I happen to have two home births, but I could have gone to hospital with them. But because of the complexity of a surrogacy birth and everyone who's involved, and I really believe that kind of the efficiency of birth and the comfort that you can get from birth is when you're in your safe place and you have those kind of oxytocin and endorphin hormones running through your body. And the only way you can get to them is if you're not feeling adrenaline. And I think when there's lots of people involved and the unknown's there, and I want to, this baby to come, you know, in a way that these guys can kind of get on with bonding with them and meeting with them, and, you know, straight after the birth. I think if in a home birth situation, if then it ended up in a transfer to hospital, that could mean perhaps Jack was separated or one of them would be separated. People at the hospital wouldn't know the situation. Having a planned C-section means that everyone's kind of briefed for the day, and they've been amazing, haven't they?
Yeah, they've been really good.
And it just takes that unknown out of it. And that's what hypnobirthing's about, really. It's taking the fear and the unknown out. It's very different when it's your own baby and you can be in like your bubble and kind of just you and your partner, and that's, you know, where you go and you go together. But when there's, you know, four of you and five of you involved, it's a bit of an entourage, really. And, you know, Sophie's family and Jack's family as well, but everyone's kind of really waiting for this baby. A big part of, you know, the hypnobirthing teaching I do is about due dates and not focusing on a due date, whereas everyone's focusing on, yeah. Everyone would focus on this due date. So actually creating that date for us makes it a lot easier and makes sense.
Yeah, there's an element of control in something, you know, and Sophie said it previously that, you know, suddenly you might go into labour sooner. That hasn't happened previous, you know, with previous pregnancies.
Yeah.
And but yeah, what we can control, if we can control things, it's nice to be able to.
Definitely.
And do you think, and again, only answer this if you're comfortable, do you think it takes a bit of the emotion out of it as well?
Yeah, I guess it does. It's... Well, I guess when we had our home births with Molly and Theo, it was that kind of, it's quite a magical time for us because it's just us in that world. Whereas, again, like that might not happen in that sense and we'd all have to move somewhere. And that emotional side, I think, would be quite difficult to deal with if that didn't happen. So, yeah, it also separates from our experience a bit as well. But I think for me, it's more about the, it's planned for everyone involved, you know, for our kids as well. We know where they're going to be on the day. And like James said, his dad's coming to help out as well, because they'll be very excited to see him. So it's just putting all those little things in place.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, just to make myself clear, I don't mean that because it's a C-section it's less emotional. I mean more because it is different to your exactly.
Yeah. And you know, I teach so many parents who are planning a C-section as well, and it's all about doing, you know, understanding the pros and considerations of each place and going where you feel happiest, really. And I think we will all feel happiest in this situation in a planned environment.
Yeah, no, I can see how that makes sense. And things, you know, you touched upon a lot of things there, like things like, you know, if there was an ambulance, that, you know, one of you would be separated. Like you've really thought about all of this, which is, you know, it's incredible, actually. And I'm sure that you've all been involved in lots of these conversations. So, you know, yeah, there's a lot of food for thought there for people, which is great. Thank you. And Jack is going to be in the room, we heard previously, which is exciting. And everything you've said up until this point, I barely need to ask the question, you know, like, how do you feel about that? You know, everything you said really made it quite, that's something you're going to be open to.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, even if it was a physiological birth, you know, I'd be, you know, absolutely. But I feel also maybe that might be weird for Jack, but... but that might end up being how it happens.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, absolutely, Jack needs to be there.
Both me and Jack think it's coming out of here, by the way.
Both you and Jack?
I think it's coming out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Is there, is money
we'll
change hands? Not yet. And so, you know, the little one's born in a couple of weeks. I'm not going to ask the date, don't worry. A few weeks. And then you hand the baby over, your son.
Yes.
Oh,
that's a weird.
Oh, I was excited for you, honestly. And then, you know, you guys kind of, you just take some time to recover.
Yeah, I've got 6 weeks out of the schedule because that's what I tell. I know. We have a busy schedule.
It is a schedule.
Yeah.
I run by Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah. And shared calendars. And it's my recovery period. And I'm really hot on that with parents that I teach, that whatever kind of birth you have, you need that time to recover. So obviously it's different as well if you have a newborn, but I still want that time to be able to do that, because then I want to be the best I can be for the kids and everything after that.
Absolutely. And we talk about the fourth trimester.
Exactly.
And, you know, like you say, there are some components that aren't going to be there, but you still need to recover yourself. So it might not be quite as long when you first have your baby, but there's still, physically and emotionally, I'm sure there are going to be, you know, kind of things that you need to deal with and recover from. And
and obviously having a C-section, it's the, you can't drive as well for a little while, so just making sure we plan for all that, which we have all together. And so for Jack, have been great at handling the logistics of that as well for us.
And then life goes back to normal. After that. Well, for you guys, and then we'll be the ones with the newborn up all night.
I keep comparing it to like a wedding day for us, because you've got all this build up, and it will be a day of, you know, obviously the baby being born and everything, and then we all go home.
We'll
deal with the bill for, you know, while I recover. All life goes on as normal. But, you know, for us, we've got things planned in, like we're going on holiday in June with the kids and things. So it'll be a really nice thing to look forward to. And they'll have their baby. Like, it'll be the best kind of aftermath it could be.
And you guys have known each other since you were 12, is that right?
And
you live quite locally to each other. So you are going to be, like, just as involved, so involved in each other's lives all throughout.
I'm not sure we'll get away with asking for them to babysit.
We'll be last on the list. I think Ollie and Theo will want them to see them all the time, especially. Yeah. Obviously, we will as well. I think they can all grow up together.
That's going to be a really special bond for them, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Which is amazing. And for you guys too. So if I asked Sophie and Jack this, you know, if you could actually, Sophie put it much more eloquently than I did when I asked, that, you know, if she was writing a letter to herself a few years ago, you know, maybe just when you were thinking about it, like, would you change anything? Is there anything that now you've been through the process you think, oh, you know what, if I was giving advice, I would say maybe try something else? Or has it just happened kind of as you'd anticipated?
So I don't think we'd do anything differently, but I'm really glad that we documented everything, and we did share it on social media as well. That might not be something that everyone wants to do, but definitely document from the very beginning, like your experiences and how you're feeling and things, because you might want to share it later on, whatever the outcome. But that's something that we look back on fondly. Obviously, we've had a brilliant outcome, but it seemed to be really, I think from a surrogate perspective as well, something really positive to share, because I would also get lovely messages from people with support, and still do. And, you know, someone stopped me in a cafe the other day locally, who I'm meeting up with next week, who's got children a similar age, who had been reading the blog that we write, and she said that she recognised me, and it was lovely. It was a really nice, like, way to kind of connect with someone locally. So you just never know what comes of it as well.
I would totally, like, agree with that. I know that there are people, and I get asked this a lot, and, you know, about when you start documenting it, and people don't want to take photos, they don't want to jinx things, and, you know, all things like that. But I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think, you know, having it to look back on is just amazing, isn't it? And ultimately, taking a photo isn't going to make a difference.
No.
There's no way, people. There's no way.
No. No.
So, you know, so yeah, I think that's really, and to have that right from the beginning is incredible. Brilliant.
And even James reading kind of the blog entries that we write, we've got obviously the little ones, and there's not always time to talk, and you learn from them, don't you, of kind of what we're going through.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe you do as well, Jack.
As well, in some way it's going to help someone somewhere as well. And I think that's just really important and really nice that we can do that as well.
So. Yeah.
Over and above the massive help that you're being to the lovely people. But that's why it's incredible that you're sharing your stories with me. Thank you. I feel privileged that you are doing that, because I know that, you know, at the moment, actually, I'm very fortunate, and I know about four people who are pregnant via surrogate, which is amazing, you know, And some of these people are kind of good friends of mine. Some mm-hmm. people I, you know, kind of just know through Instagram, haven't met or, mm-hmm. you know particularly well.
Yeah.
But it is something that is going to happen more and more, mm-hmm. I believe.
I believe that as well.
Mm-hmm. And so to have this out there already for someone who's right at the beginning of their journey mm-hmm. and thinking about it and going through everything that they are, that there is this hope, yeah. you know, that this can happen, this does happen. Because I'm always amazed that people listen to this podcast. I think it's so brave. I don't know if I would have done it, but before I got pregnant, but I know that people listen to it because it gives them hope. And I'm sure that this episode or these episodes, you know, will have given people a lot of food for thought, a lot of information. I just really want to thank you all so much for that. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for sharing it.
And this will probably go out after you've had your little one, I suspect. So I will have let everyone know at the beginning. Which is so lovely. And I will list, you know, kind of links to your Instagram and your blog on the show notes as well, so people can come and find you too. Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.